Big Dog Ball Talk back in action, talking NBA playoffs, round one. Jordan, a lot's gone down since we started talking about the NBA playoffs. Obviously, we had our preview episode come out a little bit late. We recapped every game one, and now we are approaching, you know, game threes and fours and fives across the board, with even a series already wrapped up, and we are going to get into all of that and more. Before we get into that, Jordan, this weekend, and what would have been a formal company retreat instead was just me and some constituents going out for yes. A couple brews. Shout out the boys over there, the fellas, the band Animal Boy, you know, put on a good show there in my neck of the woods, Sarnhole. You know, it was a nice time. Had some craft beers. It was good for the most part.
Yeah, very grown up.
But I don't know if he still listens, but we'll call him devoted listener. We'll call him Brandon Clamley.
Listen. I'll tell you that.
Yes,
you better be fucking listening.
Friend of the program, Brandon Clamley. We take him. You know, we take him everywhere we go. He's a good buddy, and you know, we get up to the bar and waiting for a drink, kind of sitting there. You know, some girl pulls him up because the own bar was a little busy. He goes up. She kind of like gives him her spot. She was getting her drink. It was nice. Looked like they were having a chat. I was like, oh, this is great. Good, polite, you know, work here by this woman. Suddenly, this big, bald old dude who's next to him, full on two hands, shoves him when she walks away. And then I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. So I walk in there. You know, I talk a lot of shit on this podcast. We always say we get into fights and stuff. We do not fight. But I see this. I'm like, oh, wait, okay, here we go. Action's about to go down. So then this guy's just screaming, this fucking asshole just cut in front of me. Look, it's going off. And I'm like, what do you mean? It's a bar, man. People just walk up and get served. It's not like a fucking Tim Hortons drive-thru. Like, what are you yelling about? Guy freaks out. I'm just like, no, standing my ground. Buddy, you don't fucking shove people just because you're mad that the bartender didn't ask for your drink first.
Wow, big dog. And okay.
Finally, the guy goes, you know what? You're right. Fine. I'm not an asshole. I'm going to buy your guys drinks. I'm not an asshole. I swear. I'm not an asshole.
Oh, hey.
And then we went, okay, man. Yeah, that's like you could have just said, like, hey, I've been waiting. Can I order mine first? You could have said anything else.
He's not an asshole.
In his face.
He learned
wasn't
that
an
line
asshole, apparently.
In anger management, maybe. Like, he just needed to cool down. Good for him. Mm-hmm. You know what? I mean, bad first action, but glad.
I mean, for the record, though, I big dogged him. That's made
true.
It back down.
That's true.
With the assistance of Brandon Clamley.
Yeah, you think you're going to push Beefcake and nothing's going to happen? Mm-hmm. I mean, even that in and of itself,
yes.
I would be terrified to do that. Good thing producer Alex wasn't there because
then
we would have seen some real action.
Shit.
Nice job, Matt.
He's the real enforcer. Yeah. helped de-escalate the situation for sure. Got a free drink out of it, so that never hurts either. But the best power move of that entire situation did come from this random older guy who took out his reading glasses to tap and pay.
To see the
total?
Which
I didn't know was an option.
To make sure. I didn't know what the total was. Hold on. He tapped with his reading glasses?
No, he said he had to put on his reading glasses so that he could pay, but then he just tapped. So it wasn't like he was fucking punching things in to see the numbers.
Amazing. Was he at the bar?
Yes, this has all happened right at the bar.
What the hell?
Right, so the bartender,
really
the girl there is like, no, guys, please stop. And we're like, and then we were just ignoring her because we're like, oh, this is called toxic masculinity, honey. The men are having a freak out.
And then an old man takes his reading glasses out to tap.
Yes.
This is great. Where is this place?
Yeah.
We got to go back.
It's a weird spot, man. I mean, it's a nicer spot. So I was surprised we got it as rowdy as it did in that brief situation. But yeah, I didn't see what the grand total was for the three drinks that this guy bought. But when he walks away, because me and Commando Brando were still waiting to, you know, just kind of order other drinks for other people in that whole situation. And the bartender revealed to us that he did not tip.
He had to make sure. Yeah, that's what he pulled out the glasses for. It's like, I'm going to skip all the tipping options. Wow. Fuck. Okay.
Negative
15%
gratuity.
Yeah. Wow. Incidentally, where was other loyal listener Mikkel Jordan during all this?
He's MIA,
cowering in the back as usual? Is that the playbook?
If anybody knows of the whereabouts of, devoted listener Mikhail Jordan, we haven't seen him in quite some time.
Okay.
Thoughts and prayers out to him and his family. But, maybe moved off the grid completely. I'm not sure.
Quite possible.
Maybe a remote island off of Southern Asia. I don't really have anything in mind, but something like that.
Yes. This is great context for, like you say, a bit of a... Not quite a retreat, but we do go out with the super fans every once in a while. Like, if you want to arrange just a night out with one of the big dogs or both, costs more for both of us. That can happen. But I don't know what you'd call him. Is he the grandfather dog, Lloyd? I don't know where he falls in the pecking order, but he's there somewhere. He's a real insulting kind of dog, but he stands his ground. You know, whatever. People say different things about him, but it was his birthday, the big 70. Matt, I don't think this will surprise you. He doesn't really eat dessert. He's not really a dessert guy. So
you're kidding me.
What?
Peach cobbler.
So what do we put his candle in for his birthday? So we decided a little bowl of plain rice, and we got a big fat candle in there. He loved
it. Didn't want to put any sauce, nothing.
Plain rice.
No, not even a couple green onions.
Didn't even eat it, but he blew out the candle, and then the rice was just there. But lovely, lovely celebration either way.
Did his arms come uncrossed at any point in the celebration?
No, arms crossed, blank face. But he enjoyed it.
There we go. Well, shout out to Grand Puppy Lloyd for turning 7-0. That's big. I hope to never get there. I don't see that being enjoyable.
I don't think you will.
I don't think you'll make it. I'll probably get killed at a bar because I'll push some kid and call him an asshole, and then before I even have my reading glasses out, then I'll get popped, and that'll be it. That's where a wheel man should go. Big dogball talk. Let's talk about some NBA playoffs here, Jordan. Let's start off with the series that has officially wrapped up in what was actually kind of an exciting back half of the series after two absolute mollywhopping shellackings of game one and two there. The Oklahoma City Thunder successfully completes the sweep over the Memphis Grizzlies. It was a bit of an odd one. Game three, the Grizzlies looked actually kind of like a competent basketball team for the first time in a couple weeks. Really pushing the Thunder. They had a 29-point lead. And somehow, some way, on their home court, they were able to blow that lead completely and lose.
Impressive.
As well as, in the whole mix of it, lose Ja Morant for the rest of the series, doesn't play game four. They still keep things close, remains competitive, but they take back-to-back losses at home, four straight losses in the playoffs, and obviously that means you are going home. So the Thunder doing exactly what you had predicted they would do. You know, I gave the Grizzlies a little bit more credit than potentially they deserved in this one. But both of us still obviously taking the Thunder. We're not fucking crazy. But it was for a 1-8 matchup, it was what it was. No one really expects too much from it. The Thunder, we both, have them, having a good run here, at least getting to the conference finals in the West. So let's talk a little bit just about the Grizzlies moving forward, because, we all kind of know where the Thunder are projecting to go and everything throughout this playoff run. But the Grizzlies are in a really weird situation now. They're without their first-round pick. They are, kind of handicapped a little bit here with, the current roster construction. There's not really any direction, whether or not they're going to hire a new coach or keep their current interim coach and end up promoting them all the way through to the full-time coach. There's a lot of decisions to be made. And like we said before at length, it just doesn't look like there's on-court chemistry or off-court chemistry. This team really, and it's kind of funny, ever since losing like a guy like Dylan Brooks, like there hasn't been a glue guy to hold this team together. And there's no real big dog on this team. Like Ja Morant, wouldn't call him a big dog at this point. Jaren Jackson Jr. kind of tries to be, but he's not a big dog. Desmond Bane, not good enough to be a big dog. So we're kind of stuck here with, three solid players, some good depth, but it's just no real direction. And, The vibes are off in Memphis. So I'm wondering, Jordan, what do they need to do this offseason to potentially get better, improve, and prevent another disappointing season like the finish they had this year?
Well, I think a lot of people think they have to trade Ja Morant at this point, or at least explore it, test the market, see what you get for him. I'm not against that. Like, I heard on another podcast someone propose, who would say no if the Hawks offered Trae Young for Ja Morant? And I was like, initially, Of course not. Of course you're not going to trade Ja if you're the Grizzlies for fucking Trae Young. And then I thought about it more, and it's like, hold on. What, that might actually be a better situation. Like, if, like, it's crazy that draft class, the way things have worked out, the Zion, Ja, RJ Barrett draft class. Like, Ja Morant, like, I don't know how I'm supposed to feel about him at this point because he misses so much time. He's clearly not, like, at the point. He was supposed to have taken, like, the leap that Anthony Edwards has taken, like, last year and then this year a little bit. He was supposed to have already taken that step, but it seems now like he's even worse. Like, even when he does play, and all throughout this year, he hasn't quite been at the level that we've expected him to be at. Then there's the missed time. There's obviously the off-court issues that he's stayed out of so far, sort of more recently. That's fine. But the quote after this series, I had them figured out. I had them figured out, but then I got hurt. Like, and it would have been a 2-2 series for sure. Like, this is what I mean when I said a bunch of shit recently when talking about the Grizzlies, that I don't really think that people see him, other players see him as like the leader on that team, and that he can sort of maturely move forward as a leader. If you're saying shit like that, and all the way he handled all the stuff, even the fucking celebrations, like the stupid shit that he's sort of touched on this year a little bit. And granted, it hasn't been that serious, and it's all been relatively harmless. But I think just taking it all together, it's like, I don't really think these guys are that interested in sort of following him as that sort of presence. So when you think about it from that sense, again, he's not, doesn't really have the leadership aspect. He's not quite as skilled as people, I think, expected at this point in his career. And he's injured all the time. It's like, well, where is the redeeming quality? I understand he's still box office. He's still hugely popular in Memphis. And he's still going to, you know, bring that attention. But other than that, like, for the bat, you're running out of real basketball reasons to say, okay, we've invested all this, you know, money and time into this guy, and things have come from it. Like, it's kind of like the New Orleans situation, where, which again is the funny parallel with Zion, where it's like New Orleans keeps going back to like, oh, we were second in the West before everyone got hurt. Like, oh, we pushed Phoenix a few years ago. All these things, like, it seems like it kind of happened quickly, but like this whole idea that Memphis is this juggernaut of a team in the West, like the West seems to already have passed them by. And it's crazy that that's happened that quickly. And that's the other thing, that even the fucking Grizzlies GM, Zach Kleiman, when he did his exit interview or whatever, or his final press conference, basically saying, no, we're not close. We're not close to the rest of the West. When you measure us up against OKC, the cream of the crop in the West, we are nowhere close to them. And it's like, how did you guys get there? Like, you're supposed to be on this upward trajectory, and now you're not even close. So it's just, it is a bit of a mind fuck. I'm not sure what they need to do, you know, if you're going to say, okay, we're not going to do something as drastic as trading Ja, because they're going to have to pay these guys, you know, in Jaren Jackson Jr. Like that I'm pretty sure that's something that's coming up in terms of an extension. You still have Desmond Bain there, and that sort of big three, if you're going to say, oh, we still believe in these guys. Like, I don't know how much better of a job you could fill out the rest of that roster than what they've done. Like, they've got Scottie Pippen Jr. on an amazing contract. He's popped this year. You've got Jalen Wells. Like, that's a rookie pick that you seem to have hit out of the park. If he can come back and you know, make a full recovery, which everyone expects him to, you've still got Brandon Clark, who's one of the better sort of off the bench big men. So you and historically the last few years you've drafted really well. So in my mind, it actually is a matter of the top, like that big three, more so than like the depth pieces below that. It's not like, oh, well, we're going to shuffle things out. Like, sure, they could use maybe a few more veterans in that locker room, but they also already tried that with Marcus Smart, and he's already gone. You know, and I've always said they need that sort of wing presence that they haven't had, you know, trying to, ever since Dylan Brooks, they've trying to like plug holes with the Luke Kennards of the world and these other guys. But again, if you've got Jalen Wells, that he's kind of the future of that going forward. So, like, when you really think about it, trading Ja, even though that seems kind of drastic, that might be like the most sensible thing to do at this point, unless you want to see what you can get for Bane or Jackson. But like, Jaren Jackson Jr. seems to be the only one of those big three that's kind of on a come up right now. Like, I thought he, even though he had a bit of a shaky season, and even now looking back at my All NBA picks, I'm kind of cringing at me having Jaren Jackson Jr. on there, but for a lot of the season, Memphis was good, and he was like their one sort of steady presence out there on both ends of the floor. And you look at like Desmond Bane too. He was the only one who showed up at all in that play-in game versus the Warriors. Like he actually was, you know, pretty good. I think he's maybe a bit more mediocre than people were hoping, but like still as a shooter, as a stout defender, as a guy who can, you know, handle the ball a little bit, like Desmond Bane's pretty solid. So yeah, maybe you got to explore trading Ja, but like who's taking a chance on him at this point is the issue. And what exactly are you going to be getting back? Cause then does that mean, are you taking a step back as a team to sort of recalibrate because you're so good? You've shown that you've been so good at drafting. But other people have made the point too. I don't think, unless you're going to do a complete overhaul, like Memphis has a really solid foundation of deep players that win a lot of games in the regular season. And it's been proven even when Ja doesn't play. I mean, that's been the big story of the last few years. So trading him away to take a step back won't even necessarily mean that you're getting high draft picks in a few years. Like that might just be mediocrity. So it's tough. I mean, I'm not even really giving an answer to the question of what do they do, because I don't know. It feels like that there's not like an easy way forward, but I would seriously be thinking about the Ja question and whether or not you can get someone else to sort of take a chance on him. Because the other thing too, and I think you another parallel to the Zion and New Orleans situation, is you get to a point where it's kind of too late. Like if this guy's stock keeps getting lower and lower and lower, it'll be at a point where you can't really trade him. But I'm interested to hear what you think, Matt, because I mean, like it is a debate of what you do with a player like this who's clearly so talented, one of the most talented in the league, but can't stay on the court and has all these other issues. And clearly it's just, they're just not good enough. So you have to do something. I don't know, man.
Yeah. It's a really weird situation. Cause like they win 48 games. Like if they're in the East, they're a top six team, no problem. I think if you really want to split hairs here, you know, they would be the sixth team because the Bucks have the head to head series tiebreaker, if that was the situation. But like they are a solid team. Like 48 wins in the regular season is not a bad squad at all. Like there was years when, you know, that would get you like a top four seed depending on the season. Like this is a team that, like you said, like, it has performed well. They had some bad bounces go their way. But like at the end of the day, it's not about the level of talent on this team that I think is the problem. Again, it is just, it doesn't seem like there's no synergy on this squad. It just doesn't seem like they fit personally. The personalities just clash too much. Again, things are kept pretty close to the chest there in Memphis, but I wouldn't be surprised if some of these younger players or guys like Jaren Jackson and Desmond Bane are a little bit sick of Ja Morant and some of the negative attention he's brought to their team.
Exactly.
It seemed like that was the case when Dylan Brooks kind of got ousted out of there, and he kind of was that original fall guy, was that they were saying the guys in the locker room didn't respect him, they didn't like his antics and the way that he carried himself, and I think maybe that's kind of the same deal here with Ja Morant. His stock is definitely lower than it was a couple of years ago. I mean, for God's sake, at one point, I believe coming into the season, I had him as my MVP pick 1 year.
And that wasn't crazy
at the time. No, and I still think that he could potentially get to a level like that because he is such a unique talent. And, he does stuff on the court that only very few players we've ever seen in NBA history can replicate. But at the same time, there's a couple of things that are obviously glaring weaknesses defensively. He's never been a leader on that side of the floor. He's never shown much interest on the side of the floor. It's kind of, he makes up with it some flashy blocks and steals because he is such a freak athlete. But outside of that, people are blowing by him, no problem. Playmaking, he's still, very solid, but the spacing on the floor, like the 3-point shot needs to be better at this point in his career. He shot 30% from 3-point range in the regular season this year. That's not going to cut it as a starting point guard in the modern NBA. You got to get that up to at least like 34-35%, especially at the volume that he's trying to shoot these at. And then really just lastly, and again, I think this is just, the Grizzlies, I don't think it's unfair of them to kind of say, we've tried it, we may as well move on from him. Even if he does end up somehow getting miraculously healthy and everything gets better and there's no other issues going forward, I still think trading him makes sense just because, like you kind of touched upon there, like they have proven they can play well without him in the lineup, and you may as well see how far you can go for a regular season with that because he's out of the lineup so often. Like this isn't like a conversation that's happened because it was a one-time thing that they went on a winning streak when he was out of the lineup. Like they consistently win when he's not in the lineup. Like it's a proven fact that they can still do it without him. He is not impacting the game at such a higher level that you know they can't string together wins when he's not there. So if he's not healthy, you're paying him a lot of money to be there. He's giving your you know team and your brand a lot of negative attention. I think at this point, you can cut your losses. You can take your trades. If you want to get a stockpile of picks, I still think you could probably get at least three first-round picks for a guy like Ja Morant. I think you could probably get another borderline all-star type of player or you know a couple of serviceable guys and a pick. Like, there's a lot of avenues you could go here because you know in the modern NBA, the point guard position kind of still is the king as far as it goes right now. And I think that there's probably a suitor out there in the offseason that you know will kind of eventually reveal itself. But yeah, I mean, because the roster itself is even kind of a weirdly constructed one. Like, I always think that they have too many like non really descript players, if that makes sense. Like, they no one really, you look at them and they're like, yes, they fit this exact role. This is who they should be. This is where they're kind of what they bring to the table on the Grizzlies. Desmond Bain, kind of at times is like a lead ball handler. Sometimes he's just an off-ball shooter. Sometimes all he does is take it to the rim. Jaren Jackson, sometimes he's just a stretch four. Sometimes he's like a rim protecting five. He can't rebound the ball regardless. But it just doesn't seem like anyone on this team has a dead set identity or really an understanding of what they need to bring to this team on any given night. And maybe switching it up at the helm there a little bit. And you know, I think again, just finding a way to you know, get somebody in there where, like, I think you could roll out a backcourt of Scottie Pippen Jr. and Desmond Bane as a one and two, because Desmond Bane the three is stupid. I haven't liked Desmond Bane playing the three ever. And you know, then Jaren Jackson Jr., I kind of imagine him as kind of that Anthony Davis type of power forward, finishes games at the five. You know, Edie can start together if you know they want to. So I think really you just need to get one more kind of all around, like, again, a Brandon Ingram would have been amazing, you know, for them to try and go after this season. Jimmy Butler would have been amazing if he, you know, kind of didn't already say, I have no interest playing there. And again, it wasn't a basketball fit. It was likely a culture thing. You'd not want to play for the Grizzlies because of the, you know, the rotation they had out there. The one guy I see out there that makes sense for a trade, Jordan, and you know, he's going to be on the market. I don't know what kind of assets they could give up. I don't think a Ja Morant move would make sense for them. But, you know, if they could finagle it, maybe there's multiple moves to be made in the offseason. But Kevin Durant over to the Grizzlies, I think, would be a really good fit. I think that he would go into a situation where he can kind of be the lead horse he wants to. And then, maybe actually win some ball games. I think he fits well. He fits the position of need that we've been saying for 4 years now that they need to fill with that kind of big wing that can ball handle a little bit. So that's my big offseason solution is, I unfortunately still am a Ja Morant fan, but I do think they need to kind of just move on. And it's not just for their sake, but for Ja's sake as well. I think everyone needs to change the scenery and just make a healthy, clean breakup on this one.
Yeah. And someone like Kevin Durant would be great. I mean, we'll see how effective KD can be these next few years. I mean, but like we've been saying that already for a few years, and it's like he's still averaged, 27 this year. I had him as an all-star. Still very effective, and would fill. He's going back to sort of the Golden State role, at least positionally, that he filled if he was in a situation like that, where maybe you'd start with KD technically at the three and Triple J at the four, ED at the five, but then ED's off the floor in quite a number of important sort of situations. Yeah. You've got the KD Triple J front court there at the 4-5. That would work. But then, you've got to think about, you know, how that money works. If you're bringing in KD, you're probably you can't have Morant there as well at the same time. So, unless you want to be one of these sort of second, third, seventh apron teams or whatever. So there's that part of it as well, which is like strange because in a lot of ways, Memphis has done everything that you need to do in sort of the modern era of getting drafting well and having cheap players. But still having like a deep team, that's part of the reason why they're so good during the regular season. They've got all these contributors, but then when it comes to playoff basketball, that's always been kind of their downfall or a bit of their weakness is that it's like, okay, but are your top five or your top three, like your big three, are they good enough to compete with the other big threes and top fives across the league? And the answer so far has been no. So it's like, Do you make a move to get less deep? Do you make a consolidation trade where you're sending out three and you're getting one back? And who is that guy? And is it going to work culturally and with the fit? I don't think this is a really tough situation for a team to be in. We'll see what they do. The most likely thing, because this is always the most likely thing, is that they do very little and they sort of stand pat and they want to come back and say, we want to, hopefully be more healthy next year and see where we stand. I would not be hanging up the phone if people are calling about John Morant. I would hear everybody out and just see, because I think this has been a pretty, injuries or no injuries, I think this has been a damning second half of the season and playoffs for that big three and John Morant specifically.
Yeah, well, we are going to keep a close eye here on the Grizzlies moving forward, but sayonara, enjoy Cancun, and congrats to the Thunder on moving on here. Let's go and talk about a couple more games here. They're recording this on Monday afternoon. We got a lot of games coming up here, I think it's just the two doubleheader tonight. The Miami Heat will be being swept on their own way out here.
Get them out of there.
But one series that I want to touch upon here first, Jordan, because we did get some big news here from Shams today regarding the Indiana Pacers versus the Milwaukee Bucks series. Unfortunately, even though it was a miracle that he was able to come back, and it looked like this series was just about to get interesting, the Bucks rally back, they get the win in game three. Maybe we'll see them put up a fight here against the Pacers, but unfortunately that was not meant to be, as Damian Lillard is now going to be out for the rest of the series with a torn Achilles. Brutal. It really sucks to see, he comes back from the blood clots kind of unceremoniously. Like, it's an unprecedented, recovery, medical marvel that they was able to happen. Yep. And then, this happens. Something unavoidable, freak accident, 6 minutes into the fucking game. It just sucks. It really does. The series, again, now is going to be going back to being unwatchable, as the Pacers went on to absolutely shellack and beat the dog shit right out of the Bucks. And now they're going to be going back to the farmhouse, field house.
Banker's Life or something? Oh, I forget what it is.
I don't know. Yeah.
The field house.
The field house. They're going back, and I don't want to call it time of death, Jordan, but at this point, it really looks like it's over. Without Dame on the court, it hasn't been close. The game two, when he was able to come back, at least was a respectable finish. They kind of had to claw their way back, but at least it was only an 8-point finish to end it. Then they get a 16-point win, and then another big blowout, which we kind of had grown accustomed to, in that first game. Yeah, it just is like, this is just like, I think they're in a worse situation. We just went and harped about the Grizzlies for 20 minutes, but like, legitimately, I am really, really, really concerned about like the future for the Bucks here. Like, I don't give them any chance to win this series down 3-1. The Pacers are still playing solid basketball, even though, they are a very hot and cold squad themselves. Giannis is playing awesome, but it's like, you got Kyle Kuzma averaging fucking 2 points per game. You're fucked. Like, you have Jericho Sims playing fucking minutes. Like, it's not a good situation at all for the Bucks. And I really am concerned, just for their odds to even compete next year, because Damian Lillard, he's on the wrong side of 30, and an Achilles tear can sometimes kind of be a bit of a death sentence, even with how good a rehab and everything is for current day athletes. Like, I genuinely think that this kind of could be the moment we all look at and say, this was when Dame kind of fell off. And I'm hoping that's not the case, but based on history, that's kind of what happens after an injury like this. I mean, you can go look at Kobe Bryant, the steep drop off he had.
Yep.
A little bit older than Dame, but only by 1 or 2 years.
I
think Dame is about 34 years old, 35 years old now. 2010 draft class, and he was a mature draftee. So I'm hoping that I'm wrong, but I think at this point, if the Grizzlies are going to be selling high in the offseason, I think that the Bucks should be absolutely having a fire sale this offseason with how badly things have shaken out.
Oh yeah, yeah, you've got to trade Giannis. I mean, we've already talked about this many times. Like, even if the Bucks made it to the second round and then got, lost to the Cavs, I would feel the same way. It's like, you're still not close. This just shows you're even less close than maybe even you guys thought.
And the only way they do that is if Giannis averages like 50 points the rest of the series. Yeah. Like, there's no fucking chance anyone else on this team. Like, they're all doing what they can, but no one on that team is a feared force on the court. No one on that team is even like impressive, not even near all-star level, nowhere near second option potential on that team. Like, it's a bad team.
Yeah, they're actually terrible. Like, when you go through it, like, Gary Trent, who had the great game three, then had 6 points in the game four. That's a crazy swing. That's kind of been the story all year for him, just not consistent enough. You're relying on Kevin Porter Jr. off the bench, to even do any heavy lifting for you at all in this game. Like,
he's a piece of shit.
And you needed you need so much out of Bobby Portis too to even be competitive in any games in these series. He should be like a throw in, an add on. Like, he shouldn't be like your borderline third most important offensive player. Like, that's ridiculous. Yeah. Like, and the Kuzma of it all is just insane. Like, he only even played fucking 16 minutes. Like, you trade a guy who you could have. I mean, obviously Giannis was going to win that finals MVP, but on that finals run, the Chris Middleton hit so many big shots. It's unbelievable. You can't understate how important he was all through the playoffs. For that team and just for the Bucks in general. I mean, the year after that was when 2022, when Boston gets to the finals. If Middleton is there in that series that went seven against Boston and needed Grant Williams to hit fucking seven threes even to win that, if he's there, that the Bucks probably go back to the finals. They might even who knows? They could have repeated. I mean, there's so many what ifs. But like, Chris Middleton, a beloved fucking figure, you trade him, and this is what you have to show for it in return. Like, it's just,
dude, straight up maybe the worst player in the playoffs right now getting minutes. Like, his in four games he has 24 points, 6 rebounds, and 4 assists total. total. Guys are getting that in the fucking first half.
I know. Yeah, it's just it's beyond sad. The fact that's how it all shook out with Middleton just sort of a throw in sort of late in the day on the deadline, if I remember. Like, I was just, yeah, it's crazy that this is the point that they're at, and they were already at the point where we were saying, like, this is it. There's nothing here for you guys, and if you're not going to do it this year, you're sure as hell not going to do it next year. I mean, even Brooke Lopez. I've been a Brooke Lopez fucking fan and defender. He's too old. He's done. That's it. Yeah. He can't really move anymore. Like, it's just not. It's
come
not
off
there.
The bench somewhere. Shoot a couple threes, but like, yeah, playing fucking starting center minutes. You're
it's
done.
Just it's
sorry,
done.
Buddy.
It's done. So they cannot. They absolutely have to trade Giannis. Everyone knows it's coming. I realize that. So maybe they're not going to be happy with the leverage that they are not going to have. But you have to do it. You can't draw this out anymore. It's just going to become even more painful for your fans. Just get a rebuild going. Send Giannis off to the point where you can amicably split, where it's not like you've given it a that's the other thing I've said. I give them credit for trying. They have tried to go out and get Dame Lillard. That's a big swing, and you got to take big swings. You got to take the risks for them to pay off and to get back to the finals, which is the goal. Win another championship, which is the goal. They've tried to do it, but
it kind of ended up indirectly leading to the Celtics being the best team in the league for a couple of years.
True, pissed me off. Right. other than that, it's like, they've given it an honest go. It's time to move on. And the Dame part of it all, it's like, it's hard to be optimistic. Like, even the blood clot issue, that could come back, you know. Like, if he was dealing with it and he's cleared, like, that's clearly that was a big part of why these guys, where it's been more serious, like the Chris Bosh example, why it's like, oh, if you have that and you're at that sort of advanced age, it's kind of, you don't necessarily want to risk it. Like, if this thing can potentially come back or resurface, like, that piling on to the fact that, at that age, tearing your Achilles as a guard, it's just, we've never really seen players at that point in their career in the NBA at that position come back and look even close to what they were at. And already Dame felt like a diminished version of Portland Dame. Like, he hasn't looked the top level.
He looks like a diminished version of last year's Dame.
Yeah. So he's already on a downhill. So it's like, fuck, I'm trying not to get kind of honestly depressed about the situation, but like, I don't see a world in which he comes back and is, like even approaching like all-star level. Like, maybe I'm rooting for it 100%, but it's just, that's a whole separate thing. But again, even before that happened, even if you had a fully healthy Dame and a fully healthy Bucks team, they weren't, it was plain to see they were just not good enough. And so, yeah, it's over. I really hope the Pacers wrap this up and don't draw this thing out, like they sort of did last year, where they just didn't take care of business a number of times. I hope they just put this to bed, and then, mm-hmm. you know, the teams can start making calls. They can start making the arrangements. Giannis deserves, he's one of the best players we've ever actually seen. And in the modern era, like one of the most yeah. underrated guys, he's been on way below average teams for too long since that 2021 run. So, mm-hmm. It's time for him to go somewhere else and compete, because, that's just what's fair. And then mm-hmm. again, that's the other thing that I've said, then Milwaukee can set themselves up actually for the future. The longer you draw this out, you hurt yourself as well. And hopefully they finally understand that. But yeah, the Dame thing is a huge bummer. Huge.
Yeah. Well, again, I think it should be up to Giannis at this point, because he was there when he cut his teeth and was like, you know, and again, Chris Middleton right alongside him. Yep. The two guys who were there throughout the, you know, when they were winning 15, 16 games after, yep. You know, the Brandon Jennings Monte Ellis.
Ersan Ilyasova was over there.
Yeah, like, yeah. Well, those were the days, man. The dog days, winning 16 games of the year. So yeah. I think that if he says, you know what, guys, like, it just isn't worth it for me at this point in time in my career, I'd like to go somewhere else, you got to find him a nice new home. So, but as a consolation, when this is all said and done, I do believe that Bucks fans should be able to publicly execute Kyle Kuzma. So there is that. You've got that going for you. But yeah, we will keep an eye on that series. But by the time that we release the next episode, that series could be all wrapped up. Moving on, Jordan, let's keep it low. You're in low spirits. It was depressing talking about Dame and his current situation. So let's talk about your NBA Finals pick. Down 3-1 to the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Right where crazy, we want them.
Finally, we got a good game out of this one, or at least a close game between these two teams. You know, kind of had been bouncing back and forth between, you know, teams taking dominant wins here. But the Timberwolves defending home court here, going 2 in a row. It's looking scary, because the Lakers had a good lead built out there in the fourth quarter. Looked like they were going to run away with it, but Anthony Edwards is showing that, you know, like kind of like you said, we were hoping to see from John Morant. I mean, he is a legitimate fucking superstar. I think that at this point we can fully go there. 43 points, 9 boards and 6 assists. Literally one of the best defenders on the Timberwolves. If not, maybe you could argue the best perimeter defender. I mean, Jalen McDaniels probably still gets that, but an awesome, awesome defensive performance from him. On top, 5 made threes, carried the load. Julius Randle looked awesome in this one as well. And that was really it. Like, there wasn't a whole lot of, bad things the Lakers did except for take the foot off the gas. But at the same time, I actually don't even know if that was 100% what it was. I think it was maybe just their legs weren't under them anymore. I mean, we've talked about, Nico Harrison was probably so confused that Luka Doncic played 45 fucking minutes. He played the entire second half. This guy's not in shape. He can't be doing it.
Guess who played the entire second half? Every Laker that came back onto the court. It's unbelievable. No wonder they ran out of gas. I would any five people on the court would run out of gas if you don't get a single second of break. But yeah, that's just insane. I'll let you keep going, but unbelievable.
No, and that's really it. I won't say that the Lakers lost because they're not talented enough or they didn't want it enough. I genuinely think the Timberwolves, Anthony Edwards played 44 minutes, but everybody else, like Rudy Gobert, only had to play 26. Mike Conley, 24. Dante DiVincenzo, 28. Naz Reid only had to come off the bench for 19. Like, they have a lot more weapons. They have a lot more depth, and that's why I took them to beat the Lakers in the series. Because they got Luka Doncic, and he's been awesome. But even then, like, it's still relatively new. It's a relatively early fit for those guys on this team. Like, 45 minutes, 38 points is great. Shot below 50%, and he's only getting two assists and one rebound in this game. That's not really the Luka that we know, that is really just out there getting buckets. Like, it's not a bad thing to score 38 points, but when you're not really that great of a defender and then you're not getting any other contributions for your team, it's just kind of a weird situation. And LeBron, having a great performance, and he's kind of been shaky to say the least in this series. I kind of think this was the one they needed to get. And now, you know, they're going to go back to LA. Obviously that crowd is probably going to be going nuts, and I'm sure that, you know, they're going to be motivated to stay alive. And if there's any team in the NBA playoffs that, you know, I wouldn't count out from coming back down 3-1, it's probably not the team with LeBron and Luka on it. So I think there's still a chance for them to make this competitive, but I think at this point, everyone needs to stop sleeping on the Timberwolves. You know, they aren't the team that we saw struggling in the first half of the year now. I think they're finally living up to that title challenging, you know, aspirations and upside that many of us, including myself, had coming into the year.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be clear, I mean, you can go back and listen if you want the proof. I picked the Lakers, and I, somewhat jokingly, but no, I'll stand behind it. I picked the Lakers to win the fucking NBA title. Okay. 7 games over the Celtics. But I said very clearly, this is a horrible matchup for them, and I would be not surprised at all if the Timberwolves won this series for all the reasons you laid out. They're a better team. They're just top to bottom, a more complete, deeper team that just makes a lot more sense. They're a team that actually had some thought put into them, unlike this Lakers team that, again, no one, including them, expected this Luka deal to go down. They do not have a starting center. I mean, in a game where they played all the same guys all throughout the second half. Jackson Hayes plays 4 minutes. He's basically, I don't know why he's just always out there as the starter, just ceremoniously, just to win the tip, maybe. Well, I have to actually look into that. I don't know if he's won a single one. I'll have to go back and check. But it's just, so like, yeah, Minnesota's great. And I, you know, I picked the Lakers because I thought at the end of close games, it was going to be the Timberwolves that kind of potentially implode, because that sort of organizedness when things get down to crunch time, and their offense in general has been their weakness the past couple years. And I you know, the Lakers have shown that they were at least a competent defensive team for a lot of the second half of the regular season, even though they're not that skilled personnel wise. So I just thought when those, you know, gets down to nut crunching time in the playoffs, the Lakers had the edge. But so far the opposite has been true in all the kind of close games. And you know, game two was relatively close. It was very mucky. The only game that the Lakers have won so far, like the Wolves actually came back into that one after they looked down and out, even though they lost. It was like, okay, this wasn't exactly like the rousing, oh yeah, the Lakers, you know, really beat them. You know, that one was still close. And then game the last two games, 3 and 4, like they've been close towards the end. Like the Wolves kind of pulled away late in game three a little bit more, but it still was close in the fourth quarter. And the Wolves just had more legs and more energy. Yeah. And Anthony Edwards was making shots and good decisions. And it looked like it was Luka and LeBron that were kind of bogged down and didn't have the energy and weren't making the big plays. And then a similar thing plays out here in game four. So that script has been flipped a little bit, and you really got to give Anthony Edwards mainly the credit. Like, I think forget the 43 points and, you know, all the scoring he's done in this series, which he's been great, but it's such a difference versus the last time he played Luka, which was last year. And you know, this didn't really have anything to do with Luka, but the Mavs defense last year in general just sort of stayed in the gaps, did a lot of different things to sort of throw him off. And Anthony Edwards was throwing the ball out of bounds. He didn't know what to do. He'd get trapped and he would panic. It looks like he actually has leveled up, which is the thing that I said from the beginning of this season that is what he needed to do to sort of take his game to the next level, which is become that distributor, become that guy who could get the ball out quickly out of double teams and make plays. He's just been great, you know, in that capacity for this whole season. Like only one turnover in this game and 6 assists, like and way more like hockey assists and you know, just sort of getting the ball rolling for these other guys. So, I've just been so impressed with him. I don't know. Like, I think it's easy to say, or like the simplest way I can put it is that Chris Finch is way out coaching JJ Redick in this series. Like,
yeah, yeah. And that's a tough situation too. It's a rookie coach.
100%. And yeah, that's the other thing I maybe should have weighed a little bit more too in my mind, is that JJ, like, I think he's sort of pre-panicking about things like this. Yeah. This situation. Playing, I understand that when you're down 2-1 and you've got a road game and you're either going to tie it at 2 or go down 3-1, that's basically a must-win game. I understand that, but like either way, the series has a next game after that. So it's like you just played these guys, the quasi-starters, you know, the four guys, Rui, Luka, LeBron, obviously Austin Reeves and then Finney Smith. That five the whole second half, and it's like, why do that? Like, I understand, you know, because the thing was, like, the Lakers had a sizable lead going into the fourth quarter. Like, the Lakers were putting together, you know, the game that looked like they were just going to squeeze it out. And then, of course, it's just so predictable that down the stretch, you're going to have guys like Naz Reid and these other depth pieces for the Timberwolves come in and just look better because they just have more juice because they've been resting. And it's just, I can't believe that JJ didn't foresee that. And it's like, okay, yeah, obviously, in a perfect world, if this was a game seven, I'd want to just play the five guys that I trust the most. But like, there's so many ramifications of that. Like, first of all, you make it more likely one of these guys is going to tweak something or LeBron's going to, there's injury concerns. Then there's the fatigue factor.
They didn't get into foul trouble.
Yeah, foul trouble. There's the fatigue factor, even though there is, I think, 2 days now between, the game five when they're shifting back to LA. But the other thing that pisses me off about it, it's like, even just in general, the whole Jackson Hayes situation. Luka plays well with a big rim diving center who can set screens and is a lob threat. I don't understand why JJ has just completely given up on him. I understand defensively he's an issue and he's going to get picked on and dragged into pick and rolls, and he's not that cerebral or just good of a player in general. But I think you can play him for 10 minutes, like 12 minutes. Like, I think over time, especially like if you look at it through the regular season, like, Luka made him look pretty passable. Luka made him, like, when he was out there on the court, and LeBron as well. Like, I think that Luka is selling LeBron and Luka short for how much they can help other guys around them be better. And he's just making this team even shallower than they already are by saying, oh no, I can't play you at all. It's just, I think he's just shooting himself in the foot. And it's the same thing with like Jordan Goodwin or Jared Vanderbilt. Like, those guys, I understand offensively, they're not going to give you much, but like they're, To have those extra bodies playing and providing energy, Luka and LeBron, they're two of the best passers and guys to make the players around them better that we've ever seen. Give them a chance to do that. Don't just like cut them off at the knees. So that part of it has been really annoying to watch because I really think there's more to this Lakers team than JJ's letting sort of show. They've paid the price for it being down 3-1. Overall, it's not likely that they're going to come back. Like, I do think they'll win game five, and then, you know, game six back in Minnesota, I think that's going to be insanely tough for the Lakers to win, because the Timberwolves are going to come out with so much energy. Anthony Edwards is going to see blood. Now, I'm not saying it's impossible. Like, I would not be surprised at all if this went to game seven, but even in this situation, if JJ is going to continue to coach the way he coaches, I would give actually Minnesota the edge to come in game seven and win that, even though it's in LA. Like, I just, if the series is going to sort of continue on the same trajectory, the only thing that could change that is if JJ starts trusting some of his guys a little bit more. If you get like a really nice blowout win in game five, maybe get LeBron and Luka some rest down the stretch, and then things maybe recalibrate. But shout out Chris Finch and the Timberwolves. They've played a really solid series so far. You mentioned Julius Randle as well. He's been so impressive. Like, I'm still waiting for him to look bad in the playoffs, because that's what Julius Randle does. But so far, he's been great, like, every game. And the last thing I'll say too about the Timberwolves that's impressed me, like, and other people have made this point, and I just think it's true. And even Rudy Gobert himself has made the point when going into the series. He's like, yeah, I'm going to get embarrassed every once in a while. Someone's going to put me on skates. Someone's going to make me look silly. And Luka tries to do that fucking every time. Also, maybe cool it with that. Maybe run some real offense instead of just pulling Rudy Gobert into every action again and again and again. But Rudy Gobert said, it's like, you can do that to me every once in a while. But what happens? Stack that up over hundreds and hundreds of possessions. What happens when I'm there on the back line and I'm defending the rim and covering things up? And I think he's absolutely right. Like, I think Rudy has played a great series as well. Just overall, masterclass from the Timberwolves. Nothing bad I can say about them. But like you said in the intro, if there's one team I could maybe see doing this, I would not be surprised at all if the Lakers forced a game seven. But things will have to change. JJ will have to smarten up and start trusting more of his guys. I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah, I like that call out too, because it's like, I just don't see like the reasoning to have to play those five for the entire second half when you have a whole roster of NBA players. Like, I get that they're not a deep team. They aren't by any means. And like I said, that is an issue.
But you can't pretend that's not true. Like, that's just what you got to deal with. Like, you can't, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, you're not deep, but don't make yourself even shallower.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of like the, like, I know it's in 4 minutes, it's a pretty small sample size, but I mean, you had 2 points, three rebounds and an assist in 4 minutes out of Jackson Hayes. Like, give him 10 minutes. Maybe he'll give you six boards. Like,
he's just a plus one, man.
Yeah, it just is a weird one. And then you got guys like Gabe Vincent, who's literally played in the fucking NBA finals, big minutes, productive minutes. You have Jared Vanderbilt, who's played in the playoffs before as well. And it's like, you don't, like you said, you don't need to always have guys come in and score 10 points off the bench. It's just to keep the ball game even. I mean, we had our high school lineup of the Buck 31 boys that we ran, and our job wasn't to go in there and take the lead or claw our way back. It was to play even basketball so the starters could rest. That's all you have to do. And that's what Jared Vanderbilt can do. That's what Jordan Goodwin can do. Yep. I don't know why they don't give Dalton Knecht a little bit of time. Like, he's had an okay rookie year. If you need offensive production, if that's what you really think is the biggest issue here, JJ, like, give him the rook a shot. Like, let him have some time on the – like, it's not going to kill you. No. Give him 5 minutes. Give him 6 minutes. It's not the end of the world to let him go
play
in there
Shake
and rest.
Milton either, even, for God's sake. Like,
I've given up on asking for that because I still – it's just – there's so many NBA players out there that I think coaches are just told don't bother playing them because they're these vets that, you know, they already know their value and whatever. But, like, yeah, 100%. They've got bodies. Like, I mean, I don't know if I'd go as far as to say Markieff Morris can be played. No. But, I mean, like, again – he is a body that's played in the playoffs.
They signed Alex Len. I wouldn't advise playing him either, but maybe, maybe a couple minutes.
But yeah, there are guys who can come in here and give you an extra, 5-10 minutes off the bench and just not completely fuck you over. It's not like the Timberwolves are, this undefeatable monster. It's just little things that they need to clean up here and there. So we'll see if the Lakers can learn from this mistake. But again, I
now
do
it feels
think that
too late. It feels like because yes, now yes. It's like now, you don't want to do that now. You don't want to be experimenting too much with Goodwin minutes in a literal must win game five now. So yeah, JJ, come on, man. Rookie mistake.
Well, I think it's like it's kind of like a player's perspective where it's just like, well, fuck it. Why, like, you always hear these great players are always like, oh, I hated when the coach took me out. I never want to be off the court. So he's just like, well, fuck it. Yeah, I don't want to take LeBron and Luka off the court. I'm just going to leave them there and let them play the entire game. And it's like, just because you know that you are a good player doesn't mean that your body can keep up with it physically.
LeBron James is 40 years old. Give him at least a minute of rest, for God's sake. It's crazy.
Yeah, insane.
It's elder abuse. At some point.
Honestly, at this point, yeah, I think it is. That's maybe that's why they need to get Steve Nash out there. He'll give you a couple minutes. Next podcast, they can do that. But yeah, we'll keep a close eye on that one. And again, also even closer eye for that one because if the Lakers do lose that one, then Jordan will owe me $50.
Very true.
That's a lot more on the line even there, Jordan. So game four, that'll be a nail biter for you. Moving on, though, there was another controversial kind of moment there in the New York Knicks versus my Detroit Pistons, huh? The Knicks up 3-1 in the series, back-to-back games settled by a single possession. And this one was a wacky one, a crazy one. I know that the NBA streets, everybody's talking about the refs and how they've been treating this series. I mean, I was texting you saying Jalen Brunson has almost made this kind of unwatchable at times. Yep. And this is how he has played in the playoffs. And you know what? I actually do want to call up the league in general. Everybody fucking does this in the playoffs, and Adam Silver, you're wondering why the ratings and all this shit are down. It's not because people don't talk about what they love about the game. It's because they express what they don't like, and you don't fucking do anything to change it. Like jumping into guys is not supposed to be a foul anymore, yet we're still calling it. Flopping is supposed to be called a technical, never called. Jokic, I'm looking at you too. We're gonna talk about that series as well. It's just been an entertaining and a great one, but fucking everybody is just throwing themselves into each other. They're falling on the deck, and it's just getting fucking ridiculous. It's brutal. But at least in this one, Jalen Brunson did only get to the line once. He only took the two free throws. Was ethical in this one. Karl-Anthony Towns hit a huge deep three to put the Knicks up. The Pistons end up getting in there. Cade misses what I thought was actually a pretty good look. I don't think OG was expecting him to pull up from the elbow like that. Loose ball. Tim Hardaway Jr., corner three. Was it a foul, Jordan? You tell me, because it seems like it's divided out there, and this is an unbiased opinion from the big dogs here. It was close. I got to say, man, it was close.
Yeah, it was close, and maybe not unbiased from you, because you're a homer now, so I know where you're leaning. But I am okay not calling that in a situation, not having that call decide the game. I don't think it was egregious enough. He did sort of, was it Beasley or Hardaway? I don't even remember now.
I believe it's Hardaway.
Yeah, he did sort of move his body to the side a little bit. Like he wasn't going straight up and down. Yep. So that's where the contact was. You know, Josh Hart was there. Obviously contact was made. Like no one can really argue that, but I don't think you need to make that call at the end of a game. It was kind of like a prayer of a shot anyway. I think, you know, obviously the Pistons fans are outraged about it. I think if that call had been made and then the Pistons go on to win the game, I think actually Knicks fans would have more cause to be outraged about calling a bit of a ticky-tack foul at that point in the game. So I am okay with the fact that, you know, and that's kind of the precedent. At the end of close playoff games, the refs are going to swallow their whistle. If you want a call, you're going to really have to, you know, earn it. And I don't think that was an earned call. It wasn't enough contact for me to say, oh shit. Like, I don't think that was egregious. Wouldn't have been that mad if it was called either. Because again, I think overall, aside from those amazing cat shots, like the Pistons deserve to win this game. They were in it. I think it deserves to be a 2-2 series more than it should be a 3-1 series, but this is how things go. It's a game of inches. It's the little margins. The Knicks have been there before. And so I'm okay with it. I don't think that needed to be called.
Yeah, spoiled the Cade triple-double for the Pistons there. But I'll say this. Like, if you really want to be nitpicky about it, I think you could definitely call it a foul because, and this is my way of breaking it down. I agree, Tim Hardaway, I did think, leaned into the shot a little bit. Like, you can tell. Yeah. He doesn't do it fully, but he thinks about doing it. He leans a little bit on it. But my big thing is that Josh Hart is out of position on that closeout. And he does move forward, contest the shot, moving into his space, and he lands in his zone. He does touch him. There's contact on the shot before the release.
Yep.
You could definitely say it's a foul. But I also believe that we should stop being fucking bitches and calling everything a foul because he barely touches him. It really isn't that much. People get closed out harder at the YMCA and you know, people keep playing. It's not that big of a deal. I think a guy like Tim Hardaway Jr. has probably hit tougher jump shots in his life. I think he missed that one. And, you know, obviously, I understand. JB, you're going to want to vouch for your guy and say it's a fucking three with the game on the line. But I think that they turned this into a bigger thing than it probably was.
And it's like, it's obviously a smart play at that point to look for the foul if you can draw one. But I think if he had just ignored the Hart closeout and actually shot the ball, like you could have actually got a decent shot off. Like you could tell that he was trying to, you know, lean in and sort of initiate the contact to get that foul. And it's like, if you're doing that too, that gives the officials another reason to maybe not give that call to you. Cause he otherwise kind of had a clean look, that maybe, you know, would have had a chance to go in as well. So that's part
of it. Or they sell the pump fake first.
Do something
like if you really want to initiate the contact, cause he kind of like, you can't go halfway. You got to fucking commit one way or the other. And there wasn't enough time really to get that pump fake and draw the foul probably. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I 100% agree. Should have just taken it. But, you know, while it's, you know, a 3-1 series, like you said, it's been very, very close. It's been an awesome series so far.
It's been great.
Sucks for Pistons fans that obviously, you know, they're finally back in the playoffs and then they can't get a win at home. That's tough. But who knows? Maybe we'll see them bounce back in game five. Yeah, they might be able to get there. But yeah, a tough loss there for the Pistons and the Knicks looking like, you know, they're going to be able to push their way into the second round. Something that we anticipated, but I mean, the Pistons are a young
team. I said it was going to take seven. That was my prediction. Yeah, so yeah. I'm hoping this gets extended.
Well, we'll see how long it takes. But yeah, it's still a good learning process for all these Pistons players. There's still a lot to be thankful for. I don't think anybody really expects them to win the championship or anything. So, I mean, it is what it is. Pistons fans, we understand why you're upset. But yeah, it's just be happy, be grateful for the situation you're in for now. Remember the days when, you know, the playoffs sounded like a pipe dream. And now you've gotten a win. You got a win in the playoffs. It could be worse. You could have been swept. Yeah. Moving on, though, as we kind of rapid fire through a couple more of these series, some of them which we pretty much aren't going to talk about because they don't care. Hala, Miami Heat, Cleveland Cavaliers, and Celtics Magic. But one, maybe the most, like, exciting, most watchable series so far of the NBA playoffs, the Denver Nuggets versus LA Clippers. I mean, we circled this one as it was going to be, you know, the best series of the first round, and it lived up to that hype, Jordan. Wow, a crazy, insane alley-oop, inbound dunk to beat the buzzer by Aaron Gordon from Nikola Jokic. I said it, those two, one of the best 1-2 combos that we've seen. They pair so fucking well together, and it doesn't matter where they're on the court. They can always connect.
Even on a Sambor shuffle airball from Jokic. If I was him, I would say that was a pass. I would pass that off. I think he's saying no. I don't think he admitted to it, but that's what I would do.
Well, that's what they all said in the press conference. Aaron Gordon, it was a nice pass. Jokic is just looking
perfectly
pissed,
placed.
Like usual.
Even his misses are perfectly placed.
There you go. But yeah, and also, I mean, Jokic had a fucking beastly game, 36-21, fucking
very good.
double-double, like insane. But this has been a absolute barn burner of a series, man. I've been loving to watching every minute of it, even though, you know, it's a West Coast series, so I'm up to like 1 a.m. trying to finish these games out. But it's been awesome back and forth action. I think both teams have done well, you know, going punch for punch, counter punch for counter punch. Shout out to the Nuggets, you know, for still rallying. Because again, in my head, I'm like, yeah, like it's Ty Lue versus Mike Malone. Like this is a good, you know, coaching matchup. It's not that, man. So it's the Nuggets are fighting. They're doing everything that they need to do.
Jokic is basically the player coach now. He's in the huddles. He's just drawing things up, yelling at guys. So yeah, that's where they're at.
But yeah, I am. It was a cool buzzer beater. Very nice to see, you know, something like that go down, because we haven't seen a moment like that so far this the series. But as we go now into a best of three, do you feel wavered yet, Jordan? Because I believe you took the Nuggets and I took the Clippers as we head back to the Mile High City. I mean, this is I like I said before, don't really care who wins out of the two teams, but I do hope this goes seven.
Yeah, and you had Clippers in seven, right? Because I had Nuggets in seven. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, in that sense, I still could see it going either way. I mean, again, the Clippers, it's kind of like the Wolves-Lakers situation. The Wolves have all these guys to pull from. The Lakers are sort of an incomplete, imperfect team that has better high-end talent. At least you could argue, although Anthony Edwards might just flat-out be the best player in that series, at least so far. But in this one, it's like, you look at even the minutes totals, Nick Batum got 19 minutes off the bench. Bogdanovich got 19 minutes off the bench. Yep. Derek Jones got 15 minutes off the bench. Ben Simmons, yes, that Ben Simmons. He only played seven, but he's been playable in this series.
More playoff minutes than Joel Embiid.
Yep. By quite a bit. So you know they've got these guys that they can bring off the bench. I know, you know, Chris Dunn, he's sort of on a downwards trajectory to the point where he may soon not be playable. And that's sort of how these series goes, but you've got,
his offense is fucking brutal.
It's just, unbelievable. But that's the point, you know, Ty Lue has these guys that he can go to. And not to mention you're getting some close to prime Kawhi Leonard performances and games. Like the fact that this game was even close at the end, like the Nuggets were up big and the Clippers just come roaring back, and have a great chance to win this game. Like, again, a lot of people have pointed out with the depth issue, if that incredible shot either if Aaron Gordon holds onto it a literal millisecond longer, or if it doesn't go in or whatever, and this goes to overtime, I don't think there's hardly any chance that Denver does this, because it was a similar situation to the Lakers where all of their starters basically played the whole second half because they literally have no one else. So it's a kind of a miracle that they came away with this win to tie it up. So, you know, from the depth sense, from an overall team building top to bottom sense, the Clippers have and always have had the advantage going forward. But again, I mean, I picked the Nuggets in seven because of Jokic, like 36-21-8. Like, I still think he has even another level to get to in this series, like another even better game.
The 3-point
shooting's
been insane.
He's unbelievable the way he gets other guys involved. I mean, we know how great he's been. And, you know, shout out Michael Porter. I was ready to clown him after the first couple games in this series. He just looked like shit. He was literally benched in, I forget if that was game one or game two down the stretch. And then he gets hammered and has this fucking neck sprain basically, but he's fighting through it and he's hitting some shots. And I think it's been really admirable how much he's been trying and still being effective out there. So that's a huge boost. I thought maybe he was lost for the series essentially, which would have been, you know, nail in the coffin for the Nuggets for sure. And then it's like Jamal Murray, he's just been quiet and you never know. Like he's kind of the wild card. He could pop off one of these games too. So I don't know what's going to happen over these next three or this next best of three. But you know, I think it's just going to be more just great basketball on both sides, because these are two very different teams that want to do very different things, and greatness sort of in different shapes and sizes. You've got James Harden out here again, didn't have the greatest game, but still a great facilitator, and
been playing well,
great in that role for the Clippers. So I still like, because of the home court advantage factor and the Jokic factor, I still like Nuggets in seven, but the Clippers are looking good. And I don't know if that's what you said going in. I think it was, I'd be shocked if it didn't go seven at this point, unless, you know, I think the Clippers are favored by like 2 points or something, slight favorites going into this game five, if they can win game five and then close it out at the Toilet Dome or whatever, that's a possibility. But I just think Jokic in one of these next two games is going to find a way to get the Nuggets over the finish line again. And then, you know, we're going to see a game seven. And then it's like, if you're the Nuggets, do you want to lose game seven at home for the second year in a row? I don't think so. But, you know, the Clippers, they've got experience. This is just a great series. And just last thing on the Gordon dunk, like I've never seen in the playoffs a closer call. Like if you want to say, he didn't get it off in time, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. It kind of seems like he's still pushing the ball down when that light is on, but then you see different
some of those
angles,
frames, man. Like the bottom of the light was starting when it was kind of through. Like you could argue technically the light had started to flash. Like, is it when it's a full flash? Is it when it's a half flash? What is
that's
it
the thing? What is it? The speed of light? Is it the speed of sound? What are we doing? But that I just could not get closer, and the fact that it comes off like a broken play, just insane stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, we didn't even touch on it because, you know, this was the game three, but the 21-3 run, you know, for the Clippers in the third quarter, like it's been a wild series. And game two, Kawhi Leonard getting to his spot on the elbow, getting that dagger as well. Awesome games, a lot of crazy action. Can't wait for game five on Tuesday. Going to be another barn burner, I'm sure. And then moving on to one other series here, Jordan, that we are going to actually touch upon. Again, Celtics and Cavs, who the fuck cares? The Magic couldn't even beat them when they didn't have Jason Tatum in the lineup, and then they got one win at home. Cool. Just fucking end it, please, Boston.
Yeah.
You know, like Paolo and Franz, you guys are sick, but the rest of your team is trash. Cavs and Heat have been like, that's been the worst series of the fucking playoffs. It's been three straight fucking blowouts. Like,
yep, get them out of there. Get the Heat out of here, please.
Darius Garland barely played. Like, he didn't play fucking game three. Didn't matter. 40-point fucking win.
The Cavs have looked really good. The Cavs Pacers second round series, we already talked about how good that's going to be. That is going to be so good. Battle of the Midwest. Really, really looking forward to that. But yeah, those two series, no point talking to them. I think very, very soon they're both going to be over. I think the Celtics know how important it is to just end this and get some rest, because especially if you're looking at Cleveland. If you're looking at Cleveland, it's like, well, they're probably going to wrap things up by the time you're listening to this. I hope they already have too. So it's like, we've got to get as much rest in preparation eventually down the line for them. The Cavs have looked really, really good. Like I said, the Heat were not going to be the one to test them. I think the Cavs will be tested, and I think that's going to be next round against Indiana. This Heat team, it's unserious. Get them out of there.
The lowest seeded team to ever make the playoffs. So, I mean, like, it's
they're
just
showing
fucking stupid anyways. Wiggins, come on, man. You're breaking my heart. The last series that we're going to chat about here, which is somehow turned into like the grittiest, like most physical series that I was not expecting. But the Houston Rockets, Golden State Warriors, also for some reason the only game or only series that hasn't played a game four yet. Not sure how that shook out.
Is that today? That's today.
Yeah, it's tonight. But I mean, all the other series have already played four. Like tonight, the Heat and I'm wrong. The Cavs.
These two.
Their game four. Yeah. So there you go. Those are the two games on to tonight as we're recording this. But the Rockets down 2-1 to the Warriors. You know, they get that big win in game two. With Jimmy Butler going out early. But game four, again, and it's been crazy low scoring. Not exactly what I was expecting from either team in this one. But it has been just banging, drag out matchups. It looks like,
Butler's playing. Did you just get the alert?
Yep.
Butler is in.
Everybody. Jimmy Butler will be in the lineup. I think I had seen something that he was probable earlier in the day, but officially Jimmy Butler will be in the lineup, which is a huge boost for the Warriors because, after game two, it looked like without him on the court, the Rockets were going to be able to easily beat them because, like I said, it's just for Golden State, all they've got offensively is Curry and Jimmy Butler. It's all you have to control. And they did do a solid job of it. I mean, they let Buddy Hield go off for 5 threes, probably the one time this playoffs year, he'll yeah. do it, depending on how far they go. Gary Payton, you know, GB2 had a solid game as well off the bench. But, you know, you let Steph do his thing, and then everybody else was pretty shit. But the problem is, yeah, you can play solid defense, but then if you guys are equally as shit, then yes. it really doesn't work. Like Jalen Green, the most bipolar player in the league potentially since Ron Artest. I just don't know, where his head's at. Like, looked like fucking, he looked like prime Steph in game two. And, you know, then they move over to the Chase Center. And then, yeah, he looks like, maybe like prime Glenn Big Baby Davis or something. I'm not sure. But 1 for 5, that's not going to get the job done for 3-point land for him. You know, no. Still had 6 rebounds, 5 assists. Amen Thompson hasn't really been impressive either. I mean, he shot really poorly in game 3. So, yes. Looking at this one, I still think it's going to go long, even with Jimmy Butler coming back. Like, I think that because of how ugly the basketball has been, like, it's just been, you know, a lot of squabbles, a lot of almost fights, a lot of, mouthing off and, you know, guys getting together at center court. I do think that, you know, this one has the potential to go long, but I think I'm ready to put the claim down. It's a must win for the Rockets tonight as a recording. This, you guys will, when you listen to this, I've probably already watched this matchup, so we'll know how it's gone. But I just feel like when you're this young of a team, this inexperienced in the playoffs, if you're down 3-1 to a team with Steph Curry, Draymond, Jimmy Butler on it, coached by Steve Kerr, it's just too insurmountable to come back from. Not impossible, but just very unlikely. So huge, huge game here for the Rockets, coming up on Monday night. But I still think they got the potential to win the series. But it just kind of seems like even though they're the better team, better athletes, the Warriors are just a little bit more mentally savvy when it comes to, you know, consistency.
Yeah, yeah. And you've got that push and pull, like, sort of younger team that's clearly deeper, more athletic, all those things, and then these sort of titans of the game with Golden State, who have been there before, but again, sort of lacking a lot of the real depth and sort of firepower sort of top to bottom that the younger team has. So that's kind of mirroring the Wolves and Lakers series, but the two series are flipped a little bit. Like, I thought that Houston would be the younger team that kind of runs Golden State out of the gym a little bit and is just sort of jumps on them and are better, and that the experience on the Lakers side would put them ahead in their series. So it's kind of opposite, but of what I thought would happen. But I 100% think this is an absolute shut closed must win for the Rockets tonight, because there is no way in hell Golden State is blowing a 3-1 lead to the Houston Rockets. After their history with 3-1 leads and yes. The Houston's, like you said, inexperience, the fact that they're completely untested and are just so young in general. So they've got to win this. If they do, I agree with you too. Then you're going back home for game 5. Sort of, you can ride the crowd a little bit there. And then potentially still win this series in 6, which I think is what we both predicted, Houston in 6. But, Golden State, got to give them credit for winning a game without Jimmy Butler. Like, I thought if Jimmy Butler didn't play a single game in the series, there's just no way. But
and they looked so bad in game 2 when he went down.
Yeah, 100%. But, yeah, Houston is just that bad offensively and just that inconsistent offensively that you actually let Golden State, just with Steph, beat you. I understand it's on the road. I understand, it's the playoffs. It's, a tough atmosphere, but there's no excuse for that. Hey. So you've got to redeem yourself here with Jimmy coming back, which is going to be a harder task. But yeah, Jalen Green, like, you, enough with this 38 points and then 9 points, like, just yes. score 20, 22 every yep. night. Stop. The roller coaster is exactly what you don't want. This is the problem with sort of young, inconsistent young players. Folk. You've got to find a way. Like, I think Fred VanVleet's going to have a better game because he, I think he's going to show up and know what he needs to do. Like, he didn't even have that poorly of a game.
He just can't shoot the fucking ball, man.
But that's what I mean. I think he's going to bust out of it. I hope we will see, because it's Fred. We've dealt with him for a number of years. But the big thing, and you said Amen Thompson too. Like, he can't shoot 5 for 16 when he's not even shooting any threes. Like, he's got to be better at sticking those, the little jimmies and the little jump shots and getting to the rim. Like, he's got to finish those. And then Şengün's got to have a better game too. Like, it's all about the offense for Houston. They've got to string together a few games here where they play well. on that side of the ball. You know they're going to be tough defensively. And I think it still stands what I said when we previewed this series, is that Houston hopefully will get better footing as time goes on, but it really didn't seem like that was happening in game three. Game three was kind of inexplicable to me, how they don't take advantage of Jimmy Butler not being out there. So it might be that, you know, Steph, Jimmy, Draymond, they sort of sense that they can kill this Houston dream right now, going up 3-1 on them, and they just jump out, you know, use the crowd to their advantage and beat them. I wouldn't be surprised. But that's the opportunity I think that Houston kind of threw away in that game three. That might have been their must win, but now tonight really, really is their must win. We'll see if they're up to the challenge. But you know, so far through three games, it's anybody's guess if their offense is going to show up at all.
Well, I'm going to put this out there, George. It just popped in my head, because again, I do think like Fred VanVleet, yes, he has been a huge catalyst for change on that team, and he has done a lot with them.
Champion, still, world champion.
Yes, Fred VanVleet. I love Freddie. I really do. And you know, he's been solid in the playoffs in the past, but he's also had horrible playoff games in the past. Yes. He's not the most consistent playoff performer in the world. And it's just, he doesn't need to shoot as much as he hit does. Like he may need to sit them down and say someone else needs to start taking a couple of these shots for Freddie instead. I don't know who it's going to be, because no one really has that offensive game, especially along the perimeter. Like if Jalen Green is going to fucking, like we said, go 4 for 11, you might have to throw
Cam Whitmore in there. Just to
my boy. Yeah, Cam Whitmore would be great to get in there. I don't know if you want to, like, there's no way you're trusting Reed Shepherd at this point. You didn't give him nearly enough reps during the regular season.
Nope.
So they are kind of handcuffed to Fred VanVleet being like their alpha scorer when Jalen Green isn't going to be consistent enough. And, you know, Sengun is a really great player, but he is not, you know, the go-to primary scorer on a team. He's an elite, you know, all-around player, great rebounder, good down low finisher. When you're down and you need a big bucket, you need a good perimeter scorer, and they just don't have a consistent one right now. And that brings me to my point here. I was just going to say, maybe, you know, we talked from the beginning of the podcast, we're coming full circle now. How would Ja Morant fit on this team if you put him in there instead of Fred VanVleet?
I mean, there's some more offense for you, not that much more shooting, obviously, but mm-hmm. you know, if Fred VanVleet is going to look like a shooter sometimes and then shoot really terribly anyway in the playoffs, might as well get Jaw in there to sort of muck things up. I think if you're bringing Ja Moran in there, you're giving up on Jalen Green, because I think those guys are maybe a bit too similar in terms of
have to swap each other. And yeah, so he'd, something in there,
so he'd be maybe in the deal, but I don't hate that, because if you got like Sengun to do some of the sort of high post playmaking, and you've still got, and it would be the reuniting of Ja Morant and Dylan Brooks,
yes,
two of the
yes.
the two shysters,
winning Cub, yeah.
I do not hate that. I think that'd be pretty interesting.
A team option this offseason for the Rockets with Fred VanVleet, so they technically could free up $44 million
okay,
if they don't opt into that. Which they might not fucking opt into that anyways. It would only obviously be the extra year,
we'll
but if they could get a trade on the market like that, who knows? I believe the Rockets can, you know, make this interesting. I hope they do, because, you know, longer playoff basketball is better basketball. And I really don't want every series to end in like five games, and then the only series left is the Clippers and the Nuggets. That would really be disappointing.
Yes.
So
and
all
Jabari
the teams
Smith,
that are down 3-1,
even though he
up.
Sucks, and we've sort of given up on Jabari Smith
yes.
Jr.
He's been good.
He shot 3 for 5 from three. Get him more shots. If he's going to shoot 3 for 5, he should be shooting more. If you're, you know, starved for outside shooting, give him the ball more.
Well, let us know what you guys think the Rockets need to do. Where are they going to get those buckets from, as well as every other series going on right now? Let us know what you like. Let us know what you think is going to happen at Big Dog Ball Talk, Instagram, X, TikTok, Facebook, roll you old Ted up there. We'll be back. TBD, probably Friday, probably Thursday, probably Saturday, something like that.
Sometime.
See you guys at the end of the week. But until then, it's been Big Dog Ball Talk. My day coordinator, Jordan Flegel. And as my good friend Jordan always says,
got to go out and vote now.
Hit the vote.
Do your civic duty if you live in Canada. And if you feel like it. Well, no, I'll tell you to go do it. You should just go do it.
Go do it.
I don't care who wins. I don't care who wins, as long as we become the 51st state. That's all I want. I've been dreaming of it my whole life.
We've been hiding.
Be American, it. My God.
Yes.
Like, when Fox News comes up and it's like, oh, all these people don't want it. Like, interview me. I would love it. I'd love to be part of America, earn the USD, you know, have a gun.
Yes.
All that fun stuff. So
once again, follow us on Truth Social.